Jamel, can you tell everybody why you're the person setting off all those fireworks? Who did you get them from? And why are you sounding like the 2nd Army Battalion out my backyard?
It's an ugly secret that I don't. Thank you for busting me. You know, this is like in the Scooby-Doo episode where I say, and I would have got away with it if it wasn't for those darn kids. No, I don't know who is doing this. And at first I thought it was just an LA thing. Like, I was like, mm-hmm. Is this happening here? Because every city I've lived in, they treat the 4th of July differently.
Okay.
So I was just like, okay, well, is this like the pregame for 4th of July? Like, what's going on? But it's been so consistent that now I'm starting to believe in some of these conspiracy theories that this is, you know, some kind of test or whatever. So I was like, I don't know what's going on, but whoever is doing it, I don't get it. Like, I need you to explain why this is. And it drives me. I don't know about you. Are you familiar with the Nextdoor app?
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's where racism lives and abounds.
Oh, totally. Like, yeah. All the Karens are on Nextdoor app, which only makes it infinitely much more entertaining.
Right.
And so people, I live in a primarily Black neighborhood, so people have been going in on these fireworks, and that in itself has created quite a bit of entertainment for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so, you know, so it should be noted, and let's be clear, today we're recording this on the 22nd of June on a Monday. It's 2:00 in the afternoon. I just heard a firework go off just now.
Did you really?
I literally just heard one. We're both in. You are still in LA right now, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'm
in LA too. I live in South LA, in a predominantly Black and Brown neighborhood, and me and the wife will be sitting in the backyard sipping some bourbon on near the fire pit, and then it sounds like Beirut outside, and it is crazy. Like, you start to see. They're just all over the place. And, like, let me be clear. Like, some of them are actually kind of beautiful. For, like, every one beautiful firework you get, one sounds like a cannon that took off an entire ship in a Johnny Depp movie. So, you know, I don't know. Like, I feel like my bar has dwindled exponentially because of these fireworks, because now I'm just stress drinking. And it's been really, really, really tragic. What's been the thing that's been your go-to sip during, not only during quarantine and isolation, but now with the fireworks extravaganza that we've been getting?
It's funny because somebody just sent me a really good bourbon, and I am blanking on what the name of it is as just like a gift. But you know, my liquor tastes have not changed. I think, but daily, what does change because you're at home all the time is that every day I find myself at like completely bizarre times where I would normally not want to drink. It'll be like 11 a.m. I'm like, damn, I really want to drink right now. And it's like, what? Like, what has happened to me? So I have like inner alcoholic tendencies that are just coming out of these where it's like, damn, it's just 12:30. I can't have a drink yet. Like, what's going on?
Well, there's no checks and balances. It's not like I need to put my shirt and tie on to go into the office. And, you know, my wife, she works from home too. And, you know, we have different off days. And sometimes, I'm putting a shot of whiskey in my coffee. Like, I don't feel bad about it anymore.
Exactly. Me and my friends, we will text each other randomly and be like, it's shot o'clock. And it could be at any point in the day. And it's just what happens, right? And so what you find out through this pandemic is because we are used to at some point leaving the house or have other responsibilities, because that part of our lives has been basically taken away. I mean, I'm only leaving to go to the grocery store. So I don't have the gym to go to. I don't have other things to do. So those were the things I realized that were keeping me from like drinking all day, because I usually have to go somewhere. So it didn't really matter. But now that I am kind of confined to my house, I'm like, oh, okay. But we've been you know, pretty good. Like during the week, you know, we usually typically don't drink, but Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, I had a Sunday fun day that was like unbelievable yesterday. You know, had some booze, champagne. Saturday, see, tequila's my go-to.
Okay.
Right. So Saturday, it was some 1942 that went down. Absolutely. One of my girlfriends came over, and so me, her, and another friend of mine and my husband, we were all like drinking 1942 by the fire pit. I love that we both have fire pits, which is
you have to.
Yes, that's a total LA move. So tequila is always my go-to, vodka. But we just recently moved into a new house, and I've been here about a month. and it came with a wine chiller. So of course, now my goal is to make sure the wine chiller is completely stocked. And so I need like 20 or 30 bottles of wine to do this. I ordered about 12 bottles. Mm-hmm. It might be 6 of them left, but we're not going to talk about that. But nevertheless, I'm like, my goal is to get this wine chiller full. So a lot of wine, tequila, and vodka.
Okay. So my wife had went down. She, I was, you know, Sunday, you know, I was off, she was off. And I think that was my first time I had a chance to bourbon and chill. So I had some bourbon at like noon after I made breakfast, and I finally got to play some video games. I had time to myself because she was in her bag, and she was like, I'm about to do research. And I'm like, oh, you're doing research on Sunday? That's really odd. And she comes back with this lengthy spreadsheet, you know, because there's been a motivation to buy black. And so she researched and came up with like 40 different wineries of just black owned wineries. And she's like, I'm about to, cause she's invested in like a wine club, and she gets like 3 or 4 bottles a month. And she's like, yeah, no, I'm done. I think I'm about to buy black, and I'm about to see if I can stock my entire wine collection with as much black wine as possible. And I said, hey, like, that's amazing, because I think even for us, we've tried to invest more in black-owned spirits. So, like, Uncle Nearest has been something that is, it's a Tennessee whiskey that, are you familiar with the Uncle Nearest story at all?
I am. And wait, that's the whiskey. That's okay. What it was.
Yeah.
That's what I got said. I was like, yeah, because this is the person, and you obviously, you know a lot more than I do, who came up with the recipe behind Jack Daniels, correct?
Yes. So yeah, so Nearest Green was originally a slave, and but also helped with the distillation process for Jack Daniel and Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey. And so it's just funny, like on the same day I ordered, like I don't even want to go to the grocery store. I'm an Instacart fiend. I'm going to Instacart and I'm getting my bottles, and it's a beautiful experience when someone rings your doorbell and there's like 5 or 6 bottles of bourbon and scotch and whiskey there. It's just, I mean, why have I not been doing this before? Why did, you know, 2020 has been super trash and I want to throw it away, but getting all the bottles delivered to the house is the biggest blessing on earth.
So a friend of mine, she even took it even further. She found, I guess, in response to the pandemic, there was a group of bartenders that started a mixology, like a delivery service. So they will deliver pre-mixed drinks, and these drinks are fire.
Okay.
Right, to your house. So like she, as just like a you know, a gift, she sent us a whole six pack of margaritas. And these are, yeah, and they're fresh made too. Like none of the, like that pre-mix, none of that. These are all fresh made craft cocktails. And so I put a couple other friends on, and they've been ordering, you know, some of the bourbon drinks they have. They have like a bourbon sour. They have like a ton of drinks that you can order, and they deliver within the hour.
Oh, well, do we need to get a name drop, or I'm about to look them up right now.
I'll send it to you.
I always cherish the moments I get a chance to talk to you, because one of the first times you and I had an actual face-to-face interaction, it was very embarrassing, because we were at NABJ and National Association of Black Journalists, and I was just starting kind of my creative journey, and you pulled me to the side. I think we were at House of Blues.
This was in New Orleans. New Orleans, yes. I thought it was New Orleans.
And you were like, don't make me look bad tomorrow, but I'm going to call you out. And I was like, what did I do wrong? I thought I was in trouble. And she was like, because you were hosting a panel, and in particular, it was, you know, this was probably 7, 8 years ago.
I think it was more, 7, 8 years ago. It was more than that.
And because Bomani and Michael Smith were also on the panel. And it was really just thinking about being entrepreneurial as a creative and as a writer and as a blogger. And that was kind of the time where I kind of created my own platform. And I've never actually had a chance to tell you how thankful I was for that, because you were the moderator and you were like, where's Eddie at? And I was like, oh no. And so you called me out and you were like, look, this is the type of person who's taking the initiative to create a platform for others. And that's when I created Sports Fan Journal. And the funny thing about the Sports Fan Journal and how it's really helped me is because I got to edit Justin Tinsley 6, 7, 8 years ago, who was a previous guest on this podcast. I got to edit and manage like 3 other writers or producers who now work at ESPN. And so, and at the time, those people and other writers were like, yo, like, this is a platform for us. And so I think it's always really important to think about. And it's not really that different than Uncle Nearest as a bourbon, which I talked to Fawn, and I'm just like, yo, you're creative. Like, you're telling a story around whiskey. We're, of course, telling stories about sports and culture and things like that. But I think it's really important to think about telling your own stories and creating your own platform and having the encouragement from, you know, your mentors and people that you care about, encouraging you to go down that direction, because it's going to be hard, but it also will bear fruit. And for me, like, it bore the opportunity to work at the Worldwide Leader, and it's like develop my career in a whole new direction. So I never had a chance to actually tell you thank you for that.
Well, thank you, because until you brought it up, I had forgotten how we first kind of started talking. And of course, I followed you on social media. I can't remember exactly how I came across your work, but I was seeing it followed by a lot of other people I knew. And so I was like, oh, let me figure out what this is about. And at the time, we were having a conversation about, or what the panel was about, like, in new media, and this isn't to say that traditional media was any better when it came to diversity. They, you know, it was a lot of stops and starts, as tends to be the case with a lot of these companies, but there was a path and a pipeline to how you got a newspaper job or how you got a newspaper internship that was kind of established. But with new media, it wasn't like that. It was people deciding to create their own platforms or put in a position of being the leader of a startup and then hiring all their friends, you know, essentially. Yeah. And so, which doesn't usually bode well for us. And I think that was a convention that I had Deadspin there. And AJ Delaria, who's then the editor in Deadspin, and they had no Black writers. And even though I think they would run some content that was a bit questionable, in my opinion, they also had a lot of really good content where they were doing sports media criticism before it really got hot and holding some people's feet to the fire. And I'm like, okay, I mean, whatever content objections I have aside, how is it that you don't have a Black writer? Right. And if you're going to aggressively, in some cases, come after Black athletes, you need to have a Black writer that's on staff. So to go from that to seeing where Deadspin is now, where they've done a complete 180 and they have a bunch of Black writers and have essentially almost become an ad hoc Black site, is like, that was what that conversation was supposed to, you know, produce, is getting that business, that industry, to take a really harsh look at itself because they were failing in diversity by every measure.
Yeah. And lo and behold, now we're in 2020, and Jamel, you've been embarking on, basically, you own your voice. Not that you didn't own your voice before, but now you have your own platform. You have, you know, various sources of income, if you will. And so now that you've kind of broken away and it's been a little bit of time now, like, how do you see kind of where you're evolving, and like, what are your new challenges? And then, you know, what are the things that you would say, not only to just other people who want to write about sports and culture, but really more thinking about like creatives and like feeling confident and like, hey, like, there's opportunity here, and like, here are the things to be mindful of.
Well, I did it in a way that, in its totality, like, when I take a 10,000 foot view, it was actually kind of safe. And people, when people give me undeserved credit for leaving ESPN, I say, well, yeah, I left ESPN because I wanted to have the next portion of my career look like it does now. Mm-hmm. But I also had a lot of things in place that allowed my transition to be a lot smoother. Like, had I done this in reverse, it would have been different. Like, had I done what you did and starting your own platform first before I got to ESPN, I'm not so sure if for me it worked out the same, right? And so I did the reverse. It's like, I went to ESPN, I spent 12 years there. During that time, I was able to create and build a platform, build some name recognition, build some credibility. And by the time I jumped into a more independent space, everything was nicely laid out for me, and so that I didn't have to bump my head doing a couple things. Mm-hmm. But what I would tell people is this, is I think for a lot of younger sports journalists, ESPN is the destination. And I said this even when I was there, is that ESPN, it's great. And you know, you obviously work there, but it's just a destination. It's just a place. Like, it's not, it won't define your career if you don't make it there. And there's so many more avenues now of things that we can do that we just have to stop thinking traditionally and to some degree, conservatively. So I traded in one job that I had at ESPN as a sports center anchor, and then, you know, writing for the Undefeated for about 10 different jobs. So, right. It's like, but it's 10 different jobs that allow me to exercise a different muscle. So, you know, I'm podcasting, I'm doing television, I'm writing, I'm doing all the things I did at ESPN. I'm just doing them for different places, and I'm not under the ownership of one person or one network. And that's where I found a great deal of autonomy and freedom. And look, every job I have is a job I want and not a job I need. And if you can be in that position, that makes a significant difference with how you move and how you operate. So I'm able to turn things down that frankly don't align with my values, or I'm able to do things that do that I couldn't do before because I was at ESPN. And even when it came to The Atlantic, like, I've been a huge fan of The Atlantic for a long time, but we had to change my role there. I mean, I'm still a contributing writer there, but I went from a staff writer to a contributing writer because I wanted the freedom of being able to do what I wanted to do. They're a excellent journalistic magazine, but they're still under the rules of print journalism, of like, you know, when it came to conflicts or doing things more in the social space, that would have been difficult for them. But as a contributing writer, I can get away with doing all that. So it's a matter of managing my career in a way that allows me to have ultimate autonomy and creative freedom. And so I would just say to the people who are looking to do the same thing, you have to start seeing yourself as an individual business. Once you start seeing yourself as an individual business, you'd be surprised at how good of a journalist you become behind that. So whereas before I was working for somebody, I'm working with people and I'm employing people. And that transition, you know, it's got some challenges to it because, you know, you feel like you're juggling, you always have 25,000 balls right in the air.
Yeah.
But the reality is that whenever I decide whether I'm going to do something or not do something, then my name to something, it's an email of one. I don't have to have an email chain of people that will chime in unless I seek that advice. It's, do I want to do this or do I not? And that has made my life a whole lot easier, not being on any more lengthy email chains about things I want to do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I just did a mentor call. I've been doing a lot of mentoring over the last couple of weeks and did one for HBCU office hours. And like the piece of advice that I thought I wanted to make sure that they knew, because, you know, it's interesting to hear you talk about taking, you know, you took a traditional path and now you get to do things in a, I don't want to call it in a non-traditional way, but you have so much more freedom now to pick and choose your spots. And I think in my space, I took a non-traditional route to, because I was a corporate square. I worked in business and analytics and client consultation before I jumped in and went back to school for media. But going a non-traditional route allowed me to find in my own time what I really liked, what I didn't like, what I care about, what I don't care about. And it became a very good filter system. And I think the thing that I try to tell students is the quicker that you can start to identify the things that you like and that you don't like and the things that make you happy and make you money, because like these things about like, oh, I'm going to follow my passions and I'll just figure it out. Like, yeah, but like you need to have passions while getting paid. Like, you know, and yeah. and getting paid and enriching your time. Sometimes it isn't money, but you need to be able to be focused and using your time efficiently to enrich your time so that when these big opportunities come, you know how you fit in and how you can thrive. So
I think that was great advice, though, like that you gave them. I'm often curious, though, when I have those conversations, that's why I like to ask people a lot about, like, you know, what do you really want to do? Can I curse on this podcast or no?
Let it fly.
Okay. So Charlemagne in his book, Black Privilege, he has, to me, a really good view of this. He has a section in his book called Fuck Your Dream, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that he called it that is, like, I'm sure this happens to you often, happens to me a lot, is that people come up to you and they respect what you do, they love it, and they were like, I want to do what you do. But it may not even be what they're actually good at or really, frankly, want to do. But they see, like, oh, Eddie's at ESPN, he's doing that. The picture of the success looks great to them, and they think this is what they want to do. And it's like, no, you have to find this profession. Media is very unique because as much as we may talk to younger journalists and tell them about what we did, everybody's path is so tailored to them. Like, right. The path that I took to get here is not even applicable now to younger journalists. Like, I came through newspapers, right? They're not running or working newspapers. Newspapers, I fear, are on their last leg because of this pandemic, particularly local journalism. It would not be, I would be irresponsible to advise a younger journalist to come up that way because that's just not the solution anymore. And I would often always say to them, is like, I found my path, you have to find yours. The thing is, there's only one you, there's already one of me. So you got to find out what it is you really, you know, what it is you really want, and understand that the things that you really want to do, you can make money at it as long as you have a passion for it. If you don't have a passion for it, you're probably not going to make money of it. You know, you may want to be Stephen A. Smith, but you may only want to be him because you think he makes a lot of money, which is not a good reason. Right. You know what I'm saying? So you have to really be very intentional about what it is you want to do.
Yeah. And that intentionality, and I tell people this too, it's so great to fail. Like, in fact, like, fail fast, you know, like, fail fast, you know, figure it out. Like, if you can fail and, like, take the time, you know, it's funny, like, this is a podcast, and, you know, I've listened to, you've had multiple podcasts during your career, and, like, you know, podcasts are one of those things that, you know, people are starting now, been starting, but, like, even for me, it was one of those things that, people, when I was producing back at Fox Sports, a podcast, people would ask me, like, oh, I want to do a podcast, do this, do that. And I'm like, okay, well, do it for 6 months and come back and holler at me. And because you're not going to make any money. And you're, you know, if you have a unique niche, then I would really support that. But, like, do it for 6 months. And if you still want to do it, I will help you. And it's not that I won't help you now to get started, but it's just one of those things that you have to kind of go down that path. And it could, and people ask me about writing and working in social media. I think that benefit for me is that I have been able to work on so many different things. But, you know, at one point the entry level is low, but, like, we also work in an industry where there is cool tax and people will do your job for half as much money and potentially work twice as hard. And people will try to hire their friends and the homies to work and do this type of work that they do. So if you're now put into that lens, you're Black. Okay. You might be a Black woman. Okay. Like, these are just, like, things stacking up against you. And so, you know, I try to explain, like, man, if you can refine and hone certain skills, and know that this is ideally what you're willing to put in the time and energy for, it can go a long way. I want to pivot, though, because there is something else I wanted to ask you. And it's one of the most important things I ask before you do the questionnaire. And I think about, I just got off the phone with my mother. My mother, to this day, Lord, she still drinks E&J brandy, okay, and Diet Coke. This is what she drinks. I know.
I respect it.
And people who have been listening to the pod, they've heard my stories about my grandmother. You know, she used to drink Johnny Walker Red and milk and with an olive in it. That was
together?
Like all together, scotch and milk with an olive.
Okay.
I think about my grandfather when he came back from the war. He just bought, like, cases of J&B scotch. Right. This was, like, a thing. And then I can just remember, like, my mom, you know, partying out with, like, you know, listening to the JBs and, like, listening to Zap and stuff. Like, I remember growing up with that. And I just think it's always really cool to hear those stories about what our parents, how they kicked it, what did they sip, what was our parents' party lifestyle like. I can remember my godparents drinking Wild Turkey and Mountain Dew of all things. I don't know. And, like, playing spades till 3 a.m. This is I'm from Oklahoma. You saw what was happening in Oklahoma. I can't explain, but, you know, playing, playing Space till 3 a.m. and, you know, that was just like what I grew up with. And so I'm curious, like, you from Detroit, like,
yeah,
I already know that, like, how the OGs kicked it in, because my uncle's wife's side of the family's from Detroit, and like I didn't know that one could possess that many handles of Crown Royal at a time, while also wearing loud colors and mm-hmm. at a given moment. So
oh, he got a purple suit and some gators, right? Gotta have some gators.
I'm just saying. So I'm curious, when you were younger, what does that visual look like?
So it's so funny because the women in my family were mostly they drank white liquor, not really a lot of dark liquor. Mm-hmm. Now my mother, now she will drink scotch. She likes the I actually insisted that she try some Johnny Walker Blue. Right, because you know that's
your Jerry Jones on.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, she got some Johnny Walker. I insisted she tried some, so she likes that. She does like J&B though. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think is that like a generational thing, maybe.
Well, it's just one of the oldest, more widely available scotches to date, blended scotches, and it was something that was made available to the military back during like the 40s and 50s. So yeah, it's like. It's a personal favorite to a lot of people for that reason.
She'll drink some Glenfiddich. I did for Mother's Day. I sent her a case of wine.
Okay.
That she's really enjoyed. My grandmother, though, drank Smirnoff and grapefruit juice. That was her drink. Mm. You know, I never really saw her drink anything else. I don't know what she drank when my mother was coming up. And my grandmother used to host, she was in a bridge club, and she used to host bridge parties. They used to rotate, and she would either host or go to a bridge party once a month. My grandmother was a card shark, so she taught me how to play poker, had no problem policing me for my pennies. I had a penny box that kept changing, and she would have no compunction completely taking all the money of an 8-year-old, because that's just how she got down.
She was toughening you up.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, but she played pinochle, bridge, be it with. She didn't really like Spades. She thought Spades was too simplistic. Mm-hmm. She preferred, I guess, more, you know, I guess a more intellectual card game, if you will. My mother was the one who taught me how to play Spades. And my mother also loves Be It With. And in our family, though, probably the game that incited maybe the most rambunctiousness was probably Monopoly. Because I was seeing some damn near scraps over Monopoly. Straight
okay.
up.
Okay, wait. I have to interject because, okay, two things. One, have you got the Monopoly app? I have the Monopoly app on my phone, and it is wildly addictive. Oh, yeah. It's like $3.
I'm a traditionalist. I feel like I would be cheating on the board Monopoly if I did that.
But I mean, we can't. The gathering is much more difficult now. And, you know, the game is... The game is available, and you can beat people. You can play it online, and so I spend way too much time playing Monopoly online. Number one, number two, our good friend George Foster told me an interesting story, because I remember I just sent out a really innocent tweet, and I said, "I wonder what it would be like to play Monopoly with real money." Okay, and George Foster retweeted it and said, "We tried it. It is probably the worst decision I've ever made." And he goes on to tell the story of the offensive lineman for the either Colts or Broncos, they all put in $2,000. Okay. The thought is you play with $1,500, but the other $500 funds the bank. So everybody has an investment in the bank. And then you play with the real rules, which I just learned the real rules like maybe like 2 years ago.
People don't know that the version, it's like Uno, the version of Monopoly that most of us grew up playing is not actually accurate.
Oh my God. Well, and then I realized when you play with the real rules, you can finish a game in 45 minutes because there is no going around.
I don't believe you.
If I'm lying, I'm flying. Because the whole thing about Monopoly, of course, is you got to make people go broke. And all the ways in which we play the game, okay, did you have free parking and then you got $500?
Yeah. Yeah. We used to the money, like when they said you got to pay your hospital fund from the community chest and chance, like we put it all under free parking, and we put like if you went to jail, had to pay the $50 all under free parking.
Jamel, that's why your game goes 6 hours. That's the entire reason. So I thought it was actually pretty genius to allow the bank. If you invest in the bank, you become like a shareholder, and then when you paid fines, the fines would go into the bank, so that if you win the game, like, you get the bank, including with the winnings. Now, the ending on his story, though, however, was somebody landed on Park Place with some houses on it, and the ante was raised to, like, car keys, and they kept playing, and all of a sudden, like, two cars out the garage were gone, and a fight broke out. So I had an easy solution. I just moved the decimal places back, too, and we played with $20, and we had a good time. And so that would be my suggestion. If you want to play Monopoly with real money, maybe not play with $2,000, maybe pay with $20.
Oh, but then there's a part of me that's entertained by the idea of playing with a lot of money and then seeing said tomfoolery that breaks out. But then it could break out over $20. Because, I mean, look, I've been witness to many crap games that went left.
Yes.
When the pot couldn't have been more than like $60 top.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I think that's a genius idea. I hesitate to do that with my family because I frankly don't trust them. So
it's one of the things we've talked about, and you've seen, you know, we have Brown Liquor Collective, our whiskey club, and it's, our numbers are so good now. And we talked about, like, we're going to try to play Monopoly with real money. And I think we're going to try to do a 20 a person. And, you know, I think I was even saying, like, I think I was going to put a nice bottle of cognac or rum for the winner, just like as a gift.
Mm, okay.
And but I also told them, we're going to play with the real rules. And because there's nothing like auctioning off Boardwalk, because nobody has any money and you get Boardwalk for $130. Like, that's a great moment. So yeah. So look, I want to go into this. I want to be mindful of time. Jamel, we have the Sip Mightily questionnaire. It's something that if anybody's watched Dave Chappelle recently, he did A46. Did you get a chance to watch A46?
I watched half of it. I did not finish it. Life got in the way, unfortunately, but I definitely want to finish it. But what I saw was obviously powerful.
Yeah, sure. So, I just kind of revere Chappelle as one of those few geniuses out there. And he did an interview with James Lipton on Inside the Actors Studio with this questionnaire. And Lipton kind of pimped it out from what Bernard Proust and Pivo did back in the day. And so I just was like, you know what? I'm in the business of stealing things and making my own. So that's what I did. So there's 10 questions. There are no wrong answers. I might laugh at you, but it's okay. Laughter is
okay.
It's all good. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. First thing, I only give you one thing on earth to sip from here on out. What are you sipping and why?
Get it, be brand specific in this answer?
You could be as specific as you want.
Okay, so probably would be 1942.
Okay, what is your affinity to 1942? Why, because it seems like you're very loyal. So what's your loyalty to 42? Is it just, it hits, it's just always, it's flexible? Like, what's your love for it?
It's smooth. And look, as most of us know, as we get deeper into adulthood, the more money you get, the better your liquor taste improves. And so I used to be one of those people who I didn't like tequila for a long time because my very first experience with tequila, me, and this was in college, me and two other women that I worked with at the school newspaper, we drank a fifth of Cuervo with a worm in it. And I actually drank the worm. And it is the drunkest I've probably ever been in my life. It's true that the worm is a hallucinogen. That is true. Okay. I just remember two distinct things that I did. I tried to eat snow off a car after diving on it. And then when I was dropped off at my dorm room, I made it to the front door because they have somebody to check you in if you're a resident. I made it through there. I got in the elevator and I just kind of sat down. I crawled from the elevator to my room. I got in bed and I thought my stereo was trying to attack me. So I was just swinging wildly at the air. And after that, I was off tequila. I was like, you know what? I'm good. And so then a lovely friend named Patron came out, right?
Okay,
and so came out and I was like, oh, doing shots of it. Yeah, which was fine. I was like, okay, this isn't too bad. Had some experiences with that. I was like, I don't know. And what happened was, I actually went out drinking once with three or four Mexican friends. Mm-hmm. They were like, you Americans, the way y'all do tequila is just awful. And they were like, Patron is not meant to be a shot. is meant to be sipped. And they explained to me the difference between the Blanco, the Añejo, and the Reposado. Mm-hmm. And once I got that education, me and tequila have been best friends ever since. So I only drink Reposado. I sip it because that's what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I will drink Añejo, so I won't say no to that because that's the finer grade. But once I got into Reposados, I developed this entirely wonderful relationship with tequila, particularly 1942. Somebody brought me a shot of it, and I was like, this is amazing. Oh, and it's also, I think at the time, it was like $60, $70 a shot. I was like, ooh, I'll be going to the liquor store to get this. I don't know if I'll be more shots. But that's how my evolution into 1942.
So that's actually really interesting you bring up Reposado, because that's like the only tequila I prefer to drink personally. And it's really simple. It hit a barrel. Like, it has an opportunity. Yep. One of the reasons why our group is called Brown Liquor Collective is because, look, I like to sip mightily with character. The name of the podcast is Sip Mightily. And once the spirit hits the barrel, it gives a chance to give it character, it gives it extra flavor, and it brings out the extra things in the process that can't get in there if it's white, or if it's only been in a barrel for like a couple of months, right? So we've talked about doing a Reposado tequila tasting, just to highlight what the aging effect has on that type of spirit, because there's some people that'll never drink tequila just because they've had bad experiences with it. Mm-hmm. There's also people that won't drink cognac because they've had bad experiences with it. And I think you stole the thunder from my next question, because I always like to ask people what's their favorite thing to sip. But what is number two? Like, what is the thing that you used to drink that you will never drink now?
Oh, I'm still going to answer for that. I would never drink an Incredible Hulk ever again. Ever again in life.
It's Jamila, like, have you been listening to this podcast?
No, I promise, man. Somebody said that. Is this a common answer?
Man. It is a common. It is. So we were talking about that on the last show with me and Tinsley, and Incredible Hulk. The thing is, the rappers made it sound way too cool. Like, yeah. It just, and it's just a cool name, Incredible Hulk. Like, you know, and then you put the Hypnotic in there, and it's that like mutant green color, and you're like, I got to drink that. And of course, like, it costs, you know, at the time, it was probably still costing $10 to $15 a drink. And, you know, you're like, oh man, I gotta take this down. And then you take two of them down, and it takes you down. And it's like, man, this is, I definitely remember one time having two of those in Columbus, Ohio at an Alpha Regional convention. And I woke up in a bathtub. I got nothing. That's all I got. I don't have anything. Number three. When was the last time you cheers when you clinked drinks to celebrate? What was your last celebration moment?
Last celebration was actually this past Saturday. You know, a friend of mine was visiting from out of town. Another friend was over, and my husband, we were at the fire pit. We were actually clinking to the fact that I have a new television show coming. So I have a new television show, myself and Carrie Champion, ESPN alum on Vice. Mm-hmm. And so that's, the deal was finalized. And so that's what we were cheers into.
That's amazing. And so, yeah, so that was announced, I believe, what, 2 weeks ago that I heard
the news?
It wasn't
formally announced. Somebody got word before all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed from neither one of our camps. I have no idea how it got out, but we had kept it under wraps. And, a formal announcement is probably coming in the next couple days. So
I won't press to get you to break anything here, but what can you share about the show, and what's it going to be like for you to kind of reunite in a different way with Carrie? Cause can I just say, I only got to work with Carrie for a limited period of time. I had no idea how much trash she talks, and it's amazing. So like, I was like, yo, like, I was looking forward to working with her much more. So like, the two of y'all together is going to be a trip for sure.
Well, I guess apparently I can only do television if it involves my best friends. So I had the show, obviously Mike and I had found a lot of great success doing His and Hers and then doing SportsCenter. And now Carrie and I will be working together. And, you know, we're going to be covering, you know, the gamut of sports, politics, pop culture, news, you know, all the things that are current events, you know, that we would be discussing now, given everything that's happening in the country. So, yeah, I mean, we're both looking forward to it. It's a different space for us, but us having been career journalists, I mean, before Carrie got to ESPN, she was on Tennis Channel. Before that, she was in Hard News. So mm-hmm. A lot of people aren't aware once you get to ESPN, they think you were like born there. They're not aware of all the things you've done leading into that. And so this will be our opportunity for us to exercise some different muscles than what people are normally seeing for us in the TV space. So we're pretty excited about it. And, you know, we think it'll be not just informational, but also we hope it will be entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. I have no doubt. I have no doubt. Looking forward to watching and supporting 100%. Number four, what is the new skill or new thing you learned during the coronavirus isolation period?
So I would say in general, my cooking menu has expanded quite a bit. But the number one thing I'm so excited that I really learned how to make is a great omelet. That is what, like, omelets were not breakfast. I would say breakfast in general, I was very limited. That was the weakest part of my chicken game, mm-hmm. or my cooking game rather. And so, you know, my husband, he's an egg white guy. And so typically he made, you know, kind of the omelets, or he did breakfast. Like, he, you know, served me breakfast in bed. I guess that's how he got me. So it worked out. But I was like, you know what? I need to learn how to do an omelet. And I graduated from the omelet to scrambled eggs because I had never made scrambled eggs before.
Okay.
So now my omelet game, listen, y'all don't even know.
What's all in the omelet, though? I mean, I need more details.
See, look, I've done them with shrimp, asparagus, spinach. You name it, I can throw it in there. Ground turkey, ground chicken, get all that.
I'm gonna have to send you what I just made literally yesterday for the wife. I made a cauliflower skillet egg scramble, and so did it in the skillet, got the ground turkey in there. I think I'm gonna do it with ground chicken the next time, but ground chicken, but two different, put a kind of a spicy cheddar cheese in there, jalapeno cheddar cheese in there, give it a little kick. And then the good thing is I'm a big believer in kind of like simplifying the process. So like I got some of the just frozen cauliflower rice and sauteed that in there with some onion, and then did about 8 eggs and a little milk, kind of mushed that all together, put it in the oven for about 45 minutes in that cast iron skillet. And the good thing is we got breakfast now for like the next 3 to 4 days. So, and fellas, I'm going to tell you right now, I make breakfast for my wife every day. And I'm fortunate again, like I don't have to be at work sometimes till 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And she already works from home. So, but I do my best to try to make sure my lady is fed every morning. So,
that is the sweetest thing.
It might've made it a little easier for her to say yes to me when I asked. So just
now I see.
See, you know, it's, you do what you got to keep, her happy. So there it is. the next question is number five, is there a spirit or a distillery or like a tour you've wanted to go on? So like I think about for myself, I've done the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky, but I really would like to get me and my peers to go to Scotland and like really see how the process of how Scotch is made in Scotland. And frankly, I just love the visual of like getting 5, 10, 15, 20 black folks to go to Scotland.
Like, going to Scotland.
Roll up. Like, well, what's good? Like, we here.
Yeah.
Like,
y'all got to have kilts too. Y'all got to go all out.
Girl, listen, everything. I would do that 1,000%. One time to Roddy Piper, I would do it for sure. But what about you?
For me, it would be, and I'm jealous because my husband's actually already done it, the Guinness tour in Ireland.
Ooh, okay.
I love to do that. Yeah. I was like, I mean, I used to drink a lot more beer than I do now. It's been a long time. Like occasionally, maybe once, twice a year, I might have a beer. But as I often say, I stopped drinking beer because I love beer. Beer didn't love me. So okay. that doesn't do anything for your girlish figure. So I finally dropped beer. However, Guinness is one of the more diet friendly beers. You know, it's not a lot of carbs in it. And I always found it to be tasty. I know a lot of people, it's an acquired taste because it's kind of dark, but I'd love to go on the Guinness tour and be in Ireland and get completely like shit faced at
there. And I just feel like that's another one of those locations where I just want to roll up with the squad and be like, yo, we here, and like just to see the interaction. So I'm down totally for that, like 1,000%. Let me know when we going. So switch it up a little bit. Jamel Hill. Favorite pair of sneakers all time. Let's go.
Adidas Top 10.
Jamel, I now make you a fighter or a wrestler or a baseball player. What is your walk up or entrance music?
Ooh, okay. Probably right now it might be the Meg Thee Stallion Beyonce song.
I think you and my wife will definitely get along for sure. And we just got married in January, and so she was asking me about what music I wanted to walk into, and I told her, I looked her dead in the face and I said, honey, I want to walk out to March Madness by Future. And she just looked at me right back and she said, let's do it. And I mean, it was like a movie walking into the facility after we said our I do's, and we have, I'm going to send you the photo when you see it, because like, we are just like extra turnt, and then we we transitioned into hitting the swag surf, and there's like picture of my mom hitting the swag surf. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That was pretty epic. It was a once in a lifetime, situation for sure.
We got married in November.
So this has actually been really interesting, because could you imagine trying to get married now?
I couldn't, and I feel sorry for everybody who had a wedding that was supposed to happen this summer, or they've had to dial it down or do something different. So for us, it came down to, were we going to get married in LA? Were we going to go get married in Detroit, where we're both from, or destination wedding? So we had three choices on the table. We did a pro-con list. And the more I thought about it, I was like, man, let's do it in LA, because if we do it in LA, it will be a home game for us, obviously, but it will also feel like a destination wedding to a lot of people, and we can keep that number down. When y'all get married, y'all understand about that per plate now. It is no joke, okay? Mm. So we decided, and it came full circle, we decided on LA, and we actually wound up getting married where we had our first date. Our first date actually was in Orange County. At the it's called the Monarch Beach Resort, but it changed the name. It used to be a St. Regis. Mm-hmm. So it was lovely. I mean, you're talking about music, literally music, Soul Child. He sung me down the aisle, to So Beautiful, which was great. And when we, as soon as we said, I do, we walked back down the aisle to the Michigan State fight song, because we don't have Michigan State. So had to have a little bit of that. And we came into Ape Shit. That was what we came into. And our wedding song, our first dance song, rather, was I Don't Want to Do Anything, Mary Jane Casey.
A pro tip to all the people who are thinking about getting married, if you want to work on that per plate, don't do a per plate. We did the buffet, and we actually worked with this lady from New Orleans. I think she's done a lot of catering for, like, Oprah and stuff like that. And so we just did, like, a massive, like, bank buffet style, and we were able to like save so much money. So for couples out there, consider the buffet, that way you can have an open bar. And I think everybody, and we told everybody to Lyft and Uber their way to the wedding, so everybody got home everybody got home safely.
Well I would say quickly, my pro tip for them is entertain getting married in the off season, if you will. We got married in November. Granted, we're in Los Angeles, we have the benefit of weather. And also, we got married on a Sunday. The difference in price between getting married on a Friday versus a Saturday versus a Sunday is significant. So if you can pull off a Sunday wedding, like, do it. And also, you know, have some drunk food for later. Like, we had an In-N-Out food truck that everybody just, like, loved, that came after the reception. We had, you know, finished drinking everything possible at the resort.
Jamel, are we starting a new podcast about tips on getting married?
We're experts. We're experts. We could do it. Yeah.
speaking of weddings and crazy nights, one of the questions I always like to ask, and I hate that you might have already answered it, but like, what is one of your crazy true stories from a night of being out that without embarrassing yourself or anything like that? Clearly. So
what fun is the story unless I do?
that's true. And so I will embarrass myself first. And this goes back to this will tell you that New Orleans NABJ was probably one of the greatest times ever. Because that night leaving House of Blues, I don't know how I got to my hotel. Okay. I had to be told, and I was told by friends that evidently I hopped into a horse and carriage and I yelled tally ho and so gave a salute And that's how I got back to my hotel from a night at NABJ at House of Blues. So
that's outstanding.
Yes.
By the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Your move.
So my move happened during the NCAA tournament, Ybor City. I think this would have been Ybor City in Tampa. This would have been 2001, maybe 2002, somewhere in that window. And so a bunch of us, Michigan State was playing. This is when I was covering Michigan State football and basketball. They were in the tournament. I think, were they playing Florida? I feel like they were playing Florida. And this was in Tampa. So, you know, I mean, the game time for the next day wasn't until 2:30 p.m., which means the night before, you know, work done, we all decided we're going to go hang. We go to a bar, Ybor City, and we just, like, throwing them back, having us a good old time. I'm like, the redheaded sluts are endless. That is the name of a drink.
Drink, yes. Yes. Okay. We're not so, shaming people here, no.
No, we're not shaming women or anything. So I'm just totally hammered. I remember when we left, I'm actually stunned at how much I remember this night. So we leave, I use the bathroom. Do I wait till we get to the hotel? It was me and like three or four other writers. No, I decided to pee against the cab because I'm a lady. So,
okay.
Right? So I get back to the room and, you know, I think I fell asleep for a little bit, but then, no, I didn't even fall asleep. I get back to the room. I'm about to shut it down for the night and I can't find my cell phone and I can't find my ID. And I'm like, oh, crap, this is going to be a pain. Where's all my stuff? You know, whatever. And I'm just, I was like, you know what? I probably left it at the club. So what does Batgirl decide to do? To drunkenly go back to the club where I left. I hopped in a cab. I told the cab, I was like, wait for me out here. So he's like, all right. So the cab waits. I see that the bar is obviously closed, but I see lights on the side and people in there. So it's like the bar staff is cleaning up for the night, decompressing a little bit. I think they're having a couple drinks. They have a wrought iron gate that's probably about a good 9 feet. Okay. I don't know how I did this, but I channeled Inner Spider-Man, I should say, Catwoman, all that. I hopped this thing in 3 steps.
Okay.
It was like, boom, boom. I parkoured before we knew what parkour was. I don't know what I did. So I hop over the gate to go in the patio and go into the bar, and I get in there, and I was just like, and they were like, what are you doing in here? Blah, blah, blah. This is, the bar is closed. I was like, I left my license in here and my phone. Like, I'm super drunk. So they were like, fine, go look for it. So I go in the bathroom, in the women's bathroom, because that was the last place I remember being. I don't see anything. I was like, did anybody turn anything? They're like, no, you got to get out of here. And I was like, all right, fine. And I'm belligerently leave. And the guy slams the door when he's escorting me out of the bar. And as soon as he slams the door, I don't know if it was the rumble or the sound, but I immediately turned around and threw up all outside the door. He opens the door back up and he said, thanks a lot, sweetheart, and then slammed it again. The cabbie is still waiting, miraculously, despite having just seen me climb a 9-foot fence.
Okay.
I don't know why this cab is still waiting. Maybe he's like, she need a getaway car. She might give me a cut if I don't turn her in. I don't know what it is. So we get back in the, I get back in the cab, go back to my hotel, and I'm just so pissed that I've lost these items. And then I, at some point, I have to use the bathroom. I get up and I look. My driver's license is on the back of the toilet. I never found the cell phone, but I did have the license. And I was like,
That is, that's what movies are made of. Yeah, that is.
This is, I hope I told an aspirational story. You too can scale a 9-foot fence, only to discover that the shit you thought you lost is actually in your own hotel.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can go on that wild goose chase, and if you feel like you get that type of glory at the end, you'll be like, it was worth it. Yeah, why not?
I totally felt that way. I was just like, oh, wow, this is like, this could have been much worse, and I'm actually kind of pleased that I scaled this 9-foot fence.
Okay, I have two more questions, and we're going to be out of here. All right, Jamel, I now give you a golden ticket to play in any game show of your choosing. However, there is a caveat, is that you must win the game show or you have to relive the previous experience you just told me with your driver's license and your cell phone. So what game show is it and how confident are you that you will win?
Family Feud, and I'm smoking anybody.
Okay.
Smoking anybody. Like, I'm super excited. I would crush a Family Feud.
Okay, now two follow-ups based on that. Who are you picking, number one, besides me? And then two, who is your favorite Family Feud host?
So, you know, it's just funny how, like, over time things just look a lot differently. Of course, like Richard Dawson was a goat of Family Feud, but Richard Dawson was a little handy, man. He was like a little handy. And he just was like, he just had to kiss every woman on the mouth, which is like, not even the cheek. They got all mouth. And he's like, okay. So, but he is still kind of the goat. So I probably would pick Richard Dawson. No disrespect to you, Steve Harvey. But I just had to threaten to punch him if he kissed me in the mouth. So I would take my husband for sure, because I think he'd be good with it. I don't know if I'd take my mama, because she, you know, blurted out an answer where they're just like,
Mamas will embarrass you, and then they'll blame you, because, like, you know, you shouldn't have had me up here in the first place. Right. It's like, but then, of course, like, if you don't and put her on the show, they'd be like,
you know. And I'm going to get cussed out for
her. It's a no-win.
Yeah, so I kind of have to put her on the show, but it would be a mixed match of our family, for sure. Like, his dad, my mom, you know, maybe my stepfather. I'm not too sure about how strong they are at Family Feud, but I know, I feel like on the strength of being my husband, we could carry us to victory.
Okay. Last question. You know, everybody likes to do the question, like, well, who would you like to have drinks with? Well, I've already arranged a date for you. You're having drinks with Kamala Harris.
Okay.
However, you are in charge of coordinating the drinks and coordinating the conversation. So what do you drink and what do you talk about?
Well, I'm sticking to my tequila, but something tells me she is either whiskey or scotch. And I've had an opportunity to interview Senator Harris for my podcast. I had her on. And I don't see her. I don't think she's not somebody who strikes me as somebody who's ever been a cosmopolitan drinker. Mm-hmm. Like Cosmos, like Appletinius. I don't even see her. I'm getting down like that. She seems like a whiskey neat kind of person.
Okay.
So I'm getting her some whiskey neat. I don't know if I'm trying to think of what would be a good one. Woodford Reserve, maybe.
Well, I think if we're gonna get her some scotch, I think, you know, we'll go to, you know, I don't know. She drinks with a lot of senators, and a lot of senators also like Johnny Walker Blue. So I would tell her to let's go to Famous Grouse, or let's go to Glenfiddich, or matter of fact, if we go to Glenfiddich, let's go to Port Charlotte, one of their side brands. And let's up the peat, and let's get one of the peated monsters. And, you know, that way, because the thing about the peat is that it is, for everybody who likes smoke, like, well, peat is, I don't know, like, I just think peat is amazing. And so.
Now, the first scotch I ever had that I think I might be willing to put in front of her is the Oban.
Oh, the Oban is great. Yeah.
Yeah, Oban's good.
Or you could go into the Parks and Recreation with our boy
Ron Swanson,
you get the Lagavulin. So you know that's always a good choice. The bigger question is, while you're sipping tequila and scotch, what do you tell her to do to get the VP knot?
Well, I tell her, you know, it's a bit, I think her record was it was shamefully a lot of misinformation about it, mm-hmm. about her record as prosecutor, and district attorney, and for that matter, she suddenly became the face of mass incarceration, which I'm like, that's so weird, because I distinctly remember a bunch of white people signing that bill. I don't know. So strange how that happened. Three strikes, she did not create that. Right. So I think what I would tell her is that I would implore her to strengthen her relationships within the Black community, that she's got to bring her message directly to us. I know what her record is, and I know what it isn't. And I feel very well versed on that, but there's a lot of us who do not, who are just repeating things they heard on Facebook or seeing in a meme and just saying, oh, is this, and she's single-handed responsible. I think, she needs to take it old school and have some forums and some town halls in predominantly Black communities, going to churches, going to barbershops, salon, wherever we are, she needs to be there. I mean, one of those major steps, I think, was when she came to Essence Fest, that's where I interviewed her. And so that she can have people directly hear from her, not just what she's done, but what her plans are. I mean, when she laid out when she was still considered a presidential candidate, she laid out a very comprehensive agenda that I thought was really smart. I mean, and of all the candidates, I mean, the three most robust plans that I read of their agendas were probably Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and Julian Castro.
Yeah.
Like those are they were really quite dynamic. And so I would just encourage her to just deepen and strengthen her ties in the Black community in order to get us not just understanding what's at stake in voting, but to get us energized.
Well, Jamel, look, I am really, first off, thankful for having you on the show. Really looking forward to seeing not only your new show with Carrie on Vice, but the Jamel and Eddie teaches, you know, masterclass on weddings coming out soon in 2021. Let's get some more of this Vice money. And more than anything, I mean, for the love of God, like, can you chill with the fireworks? Because I mean, this is
all right, Ed, for you, Eddie, for you, I will do this. Because clearly, yes, I am behind this. Now you know my dirty little secret. Everybody knows now. I am the culprit. I am Miss Fireworks.
It must stop. My dog Sasha is gonna have PTSD before this is all over, and you know, I can't see her struggle like this. So need to figure out how to get this solved. But Jamel, thank you very much. Thank you everybody for listening to the Sit Mightily podcast. We did it again. Another experiment solved. Let's get it.